The McIlvaney Weekly Commentary, covering monetary, economic, and geopolitical news events. Now here are Kevin Orrick and David McIlvaney.
Welcome to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. David, as we've done every year for the last 5 years, we look back at the guests. We've had some incredible guests over the last year, and we play clips from those recordings and from those interviews so that we can go back and try to take a perspective of 2012.
What we call the best of will encompass Mark Fauber, Bill King, Ian McGavity, Steve Forbes, Michael Pettis, John Taylor,
right.
Richard Duncan, Russell Napier, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard. And this is just the beginning of the list. We won't have everyone included, although they were all fantastic guests.
Sure.
But we're highlighting not only the people and some of the content that we think we need to carry over to 2013 as an impression, if you will, or the residual ideas that will help us better understand what 2013 holds for us.
Well, and I think instead of the way we would read a book, Dave, where we'd start at the beginning and go to the end, I think sometimes it's good to go from the end and work your way back to the beginning of the year. You know, we ended the year with Steve Forbes, and it was an excellent interview. You know, Steve had some great points on gold standards. He had some great points on the ridiculousness of a currency that continually fluctuates and why we shouldn't stand for that.
Well, that's right. And it's important to remember that the effort in the weekly commentary is to better understand the world that we live in so that we can make perspicacious decisions, wise decisions every day and year in and year out, have a better understanding of the world that we actually are in. As it changes, getting the opinions of seasoned veterans in the marketplace, whether it is with an academic perspective or more of a real-time, action-oriented market practitioner's perspective, this is what we hope to inculcate into our listenership so that they can be in a place where, again, wise decisions are the decisions that are being made.
Well, and Steve Forbes is interesting in the respect that not only is he influential in the political realm, but he has the magazine that continually has worldwide readership. And, of course, he's been talking about many of the items that we've had on our mind in his own magazine.
Through all of these interviews, we'll play a few minutes of a clip, comment for a minute or two, and then move on to the next clip and just have sort of a rapid-fire session today with Mr. Forbes, John Embry. Welcome to the best of 2012.
Let's go ahead and listen to Steve Forbes.
Steve, the last time we talked with John Taylor, he suggested that rates are too low by at least one percentage point. You know, doesn't that sort of frustrating set of circumstances increase systemic risk as investors are more or less forced to higher yielding assets? Not forced, but they choose to go there seeking to make ends meet. And again, as you say, ride the storm out, but it does appear that there's been a major push towards higher risk assets to compensate for a lack of real rates of return.
Well, that's where investors, they're still going into bonds, bond funds, I should say. And that is not the place to be right now, because even though bonds have done relatively well because of what the Federal Reserve has done, that is a bubble and an artificial bubble created by the government. And those things do not last forever. So this is not the time to be buying bonds. If you want, you can go into stocks that have dividends, a good record of dividends. That is, you want profitable companies that pay a nice dividend, 2, 3, 4%, because at least they can be nimble enough to survive whatever destructive policies come out of Washington. And in the meantime, they give you some money. But again, don't let daily stock prices influence you on this. You can get some yield, but don't go into high yield funds just because they have a yield that looks high by today's standards. We know historically those yields stink.
David, I think Steve Forbes was talking about something you have talked about over and over, and that's financial repression. We have a whole society of people who are retired, who wanted to live off the interest of their money, but they have no interest on their money, and that's because of the Federal Reserve artificially keeping interest rates low. Now, that gives an artificial boost to the bonds, but it's artificial, which means that rug could be pulled out at any time.
You know, this will dovetail well with some comments that Bill King makes, which is that market prices today are not reflective of the overall economy. And that's what you have with artificial levels being propped up by the Fed and the Treasury, collusion, if you will, to create this sense of stability in the Treasury market, that these IOUs will ultimately be a good, reasonable pieces of paper to own and to collect interest on. And we think that the market will prove otherwise over the next few years. So let's go to the next clip on the gold standard and whether or not we will see it in our lifetime.
Yes, and eventually, and I think within a few years it'll happen, eventually we are going to have the dollar relinked to gold. All that means is that the dollar will have a steady value, like 60 minutes in an hour. Or when you go to the supermarket, you buy a pound of hamburger, you assume it's 16 ounces, not 13, not 10, not 20. It doesn't float each day. It's a fixed measure. And stable money is always a necessity for long-term prosperity, sustainable prosperity. But that lesson, even though we've had 4,000 years of experience, is absolutely lost on today's crop of central bankers and economists. And it's very, very destructive. Right now, this country is consuming, thanks to Washington, more wealth than it is creating. The government gets all it wants when we know government does not create wealth. And wealth creators, entrepreneurs, job creators, they're pushed on the sidelines. Not a good thing.
Maybe you've seen Lewis Lehrman's piece on establishing the gold standard and kind of a workbook, if you will, towards that end. What probability do you see of that occurring? And is there sort of a precipitating event or a set of circumstances where the general public says, this is what we want? As you said, a fixed measure.
I think Lou Lehrman is right that eventually we will get a gold standard. And you ask the right question. Is it going to be precipitated by crisis, or more happily, will it be done by a new set of policymakers who realize that's the way to go? And we don't have to go through some horrific crisis that would be even worse than 2008 to do something we should have never undone in the 1970s. As you know, the U.S. dollar, one way or the other, it was linked for gold for most of its first 180 years of this country's existence. But since the 70s, that's not been the case, and we've had these ever more destructive financial and currency and banking crises. So I would hope that after this president leaves office and we get a new Federal Reserve chairman, we will move to a genuine monetary stability and not have to go through some disaster to wake up our ever-ignorant policymakers in Washington.
Oh, David, if Steve could only be listened to. You know, he talks about trying to avoid what he feels will be a horrific crisis if we don't do something the right way before it actually occurs. You know, it would be nice, without the pain, to go back into the gold standard. Sure, it would cause discipline, and there would be a little bit of pain, but it certainly wouldn't be a currency collapse.
But I think he's right in saying that it's going to take a different set of policymakers who would be willing to, on a voluntary basis, submit themselves to these natural disciplines. In this final clip with Steve Forbes, we just ask, in terms of a legacy, what do we want to leave for future generations?
By leaving them with a set of principles and policies that reflect what made this country unique in the first place. And one of those principles is sound money, an environment where people can do things to, as Abraham Lincoln put it, improve their lot in life. And right now, we're creating an environment where stagnation is going to be the norm, not progress. And I think it's not a new normal. I think it's a new abnormal. And it's not going to last. Obama doesn't realize it, but the worst thing that happened to him was his reelection, because by the time his second term ends, it's going to be, unfortunately, fearfully clear even to his supporters that his experiment in socialism was an abject failure.
So that really does get to that issue of Maggie Thatcher saying the game is up when you've run out of other people's money.
Yeah, and printing money is not real money.
One of the things I loved about that clip, Dave, was that he said it's not the new normal, which that's gotten a lot of people down after this last election, but he calls it the new abnormal. Steve Forbes has hope that there will be change and that we're going to come out of this cycle, maybe with some pain, but go into something that will create something other than stagnation. Well, David, looking back a couple of months ago in October, we had John Embry on, and we try to have John Embry on at least once, maybe twice a year, because of his 40-year, he's got four decades in the gold area, and, you know, he manages billions of dollars.
I had a fantastic lunch with him in Toronto just a few weeks ago, my son and I, and he's a delightful human being, a wonderful, wonderful soul, and had a great, lively conversation over lunch. And here's where the interview began a few months ago, talking about gold and who still is on the side of the skeptics.
That's an interesting observation because there have been so many skeptics for so long. And yet gold is probably one of the few assets, if not the only asset, that's going to post a higher year-end close for 12 consecutive years. And that's what seems to be in the offing at this moment for gold. And it, to me, it, the fact that they're still trying to paint it as a, you know, bubble or what have you is ridiculous. The fact is that gold is basically reasserting itself as a currency. And when you have all of the major currencies in the world sort of subject to quantitative easing of some degree or another, I mean, to me, gold is just going nowhere but higher. And it's probably going to, the pace of the ascent is going to accelerate.
David, what John was pointing out is exactly what we've been trying to point out, that gold is not behaving like a commodity, like nickel, copper, platinum, what have you. It's actually behaving more like the role that it's always played, and that is money. But what's amazing is the public's not there yet.
Amazingly, I think for many, there is this conception that the public is in gold.
No, not at all.
Going back to the 70s, as, you know, if you looked at global equities, government debt, private investments, gold came close to 14% of the total value of all of those markets. So gold was a major dominant role or position asset allocation within the markets of the day in the 1970s. Today it's between 2 and 2.25%.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that high, but we're just splitting hairs. But the fact is, the public isn't there at all. And I'll give you a perfect anecdote. My partner, Eric Sprott, went down to speak to a group of reasonably sophisticated investors outside of Toronto, about 100, 120 people in the room. And he asked the question at the beginning of his address, how many people in the room own gold? One person put his hand up. So the idea that the public is invested in gold at this point is wrong. I mean, they aren't. And that will be one of the big factors going forward. There's a lot of money on the sidelines that will come into the picture before this is over. I mean, there's a finite supply of precious metals as there have been through all of history. And right now, we're in yet another experiment with fiat paper currency where we've gone too far. And the only solution to keeping this thing afloat and moving forward is quantitative easing to infinity, as my friend Jim Sinclair says. And I agree with him. I think basically that if they were to turn the taps off and if they were, heaven forbid, raise interest rates to any extent, the economy would literally collapse. And since nobody wants that to happen on their watch, what's going to happen is more and more quantitative easing in all of the Western countries. And to me, that means that the currencies, there'll be competitive currency devaluation going on everywhere. And gold stands out as a beacon of safety in that type of environment.
David, something John brought up is something that has also been a theme of this show, and that is the new way of fighting war. The new way of fighting war financially is competitive currency devaluation, where you have countries worldwide who are trying to devalue their currency to stay competitive in the world markets and beat the guy next to him.
Well, and this is exactly what we see with the Japanese throwing their hats in the ring considerably, you know, with the most recent announcement being a $10 trillion yen monetary expansion. And, you know, listen, when they are buying assets, monetizing assets, it's not just government bonds. They've gotten more aggressive into all kinds of assets. And we may even see that in the coming years where the Fed and the Treasury aren't just working out between themselves how to keep us afloat in terms of the fiscal, but we may even see financial intervention where stocks and futures contracts and things of this nature are being bought through the Fed. So listen, we are in an environment where not only competitive currency devaluation is a concern, but manipulation of markets in order to create a perception so that the general public does not panic is of utmost importance.
Well, and David, we've talked this last show that manipulation may not be necessarily what we see on the surface, but it can be a much broader scale type of thing. Like, you know, yes, is gold manipulated? Sometimes, sure. Is silver manipulated? Are currencies manipulated? But in the long run, the trend does not change.
And the long run perspective is critical because you can force prices one direction or another for a day or for a week, but ultimately it takes an infinite amount of capital to do that on an infinite time frame. What we find is a helpful guide in the context of devaluations where we lose the anchor of price and we don't necessarily understand what something is worth is found in relative value. When you compare one real thing versus another real thing, and that gives you a perception beyond, it gives you an insight beyond just the price of the asset, but how does it compare with another asset? And that's what we see in the Dow Gold Ratio. That's where John Embree picks up in this next clip.
What do you think is a reasonable relative relationship between paper assets and gold? Could the ratio go negative?
I think it'll go negative, but I have no reason to believe that it won't do what it's done several times in the past, and that gets down somewhere between 1-to-1 or 2-to-1. I mean, the question you can debate is whether the Dow is going to go down a lot so gold doesn't go up as much, or they're both going to go up, except gold is going to go up 6 or 8 times as fast. But it's interesting you bring that up, because I used to give speeches, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, to disbelieving audiences, and I was using the Dow-Gold ratio. Then it was around, I don't know, 25-30-to-1, and I said, you know, this thing is probably headed for 2-to-1. And they'd just look at me like I had 2 heads. And guess what? We're already down to 8-to-1, and they still don't get it.
And the amazing thing is if they're doing the math, going from 42 or 43-to-1 to 8-to-1 is a 5 times increase in your purchasing power. But the difference, even on the conservative side, to 2-to-1 from current levels is a greater increase than what we've seen over the last 10 years.
I know. And I believe fervently that's going to happen.
Well, David, oftentimes we hear, is it too late? Is gold too high? We've seen it go up now for a dozen years. Is it too high? But actually, what John brings out is you have to weigh it against something other than currency. Okay, you use the Dow gold ratio. You look at what gold has done relative to real estate. But, you know, when gold does have periods of softness, like we see seasonally sometimes, even in December when you have sell-offs for tax reasons or what have you, the investor who understands the trend actually can really take advantage of that moment.
And this next clip epitomizes a healthy approach to engaging the gold market in that way.
I've never recommended buying particular strength, particularly if the open interest has grown a lot on COMEX. But if you just basically dollar averaged or bought obvious periods of weakness, you've put in position and bought physical. You've put in position a wonderful inventory at great prices. And at this point, I would continue to do that, but at some point, it will break away, and at that point, people are going to have to chase it. It hasn't happened yet. You can pick your spots and just keep buying.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned dollar cost averaging. Let's in on a family secret. My dad is notoriously bad in timing, and, you know, he made the mistake of buying at the peak at 400, made the mistake of buying at the peak at 700, made the mistake again of buying at the peak at 900, and again at about 1100. You know, he keeps on buying at exactly the wrong time. And we look in retrospect and say, I'm glad he's consistent. But yeah, building a good position over a long period of time, doing so on a dollar cost average basis, in anticipation of a parabolic move.
There will be a huge move. And I mean, if you're not on margin, and I've always recommended that people eschew margin, do not go near margin in a market that's this volatile, intentionally create it. You've got a position you can always maintain. And when you've got excess cash and there's an opportunity, buy more. And I think that you'll be in perfect position when the big move occurs. And I suspect that will happen probably within the next 12 to 18 months.
Listen, we've been doing this commentary for 5 years, and I think you've been on at least 5 times. We appreciate your addition to the conversation. You bring sage insight, and always enjoy having you on the conversation.
David, this is one of my favorite times of year, to go back and actually listen to what happened over the last year. There are gems in each of these interviews. And, you know, John Embree, Steve Forbes, these guys were saying things that need to be heard more than once. And I think it probably needs to be pointed out, too. We actually go to our website, look up McIlvaneyWeeklyCommentary.com, and go to archives for even ourselves to go back and listen to these clips. And we would encourage any of our listeners to do the same. If you hear someone that we play clips from that you want to hear again, simply go to McIlvaneyWeeklyCommentary.com, go to archives, and you can listen to any show from the past.
none of our guests are there accidentally. We have looked at things that we are exploring, ideas, concepts, trends in the market, which we consider to be very important to have insight on. And our guests are a part of the conversation unraveling the mysteries and helping us gain those insights, again, to drive us towards perspicacious action. It is with that in mind that next week we'll pick up with Ian McCavity, Bill King, Mark Faber. And, you know, this is just the beginning. We have, again, the opportunity to sort of distill the gems throughout the year. And for me, I mean, coming to work and listening to the best of 2012 is a real treat, because it's not only my favorite conversations from the year, but these are the insights that I put into the back of my brain as I move forward into this next year and engage a new set of realities in real time.
Well, you've been listening to the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. I'm Kevin Orrick along with David McIlvaney. You can find us at McIlvaney.com. That's McIlvaney.com. Or give us a call at 800-525-9556.
This has been the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary. The views expressed should not be considered to be a solicitation or a recommendation for your investment portfolio. You should consult a professional financial advisor to assess your suitability for risk and investment. Join us again next week for a new edition of the McIlvaney Weekly Commentary.